So, there was a question last night that said, when am I going to teach meditation? I'll get some meditation instructions. And of course, I have been teaching those meditation instructions all the time in the last few days. Learning how to prepare your mind. Because just when I told somebody during the interview, whenever you do any painting, say, a professional painter spends most of the time preparing the surface, sanding it, filling up the holes, washing it to get all the grease off. And the preparation in, say, a paint job is maybe 80% of the work. And then when they actually paint, it becomes very smooth and very easy because the preparation is the most important. Even doing other buildings, preparing the ground, compacting the soil, putting the foundations in, and then it goes up very quickly and very easily. It doesn't fall down. Which is why that the preparation is crucial when we do meditation. And today I wanted to talk about Anapanasati, because, you know, mindfulness of the breath, because somebody asked me to do that. And one of the biggest problems with people doing the breath meditation is they start unprepared. Like, you know, painting a wall which is dirty or which is not smooth. If you try and doing that with a painting, you're just wasting so much paint and wasting so much time. So the preparation is crucial. And one of the biggest mistakes people have when they do Anapanasati is because their mind isn't prepared, they try and watch the feeling of the breath and they can't do it. Either the breath disappears and they get lost, or they have to put so much force into watching the breath, so much willpower to hold it there, they get tense and there's no peace, there's no happiness, and the whole thing falls apart anyway. Yeah, you can watch the breath through willpower, but that just gets you a headache and gets you tense. That is not the right way to do the breath meditation. So it's really, really important to prepare the mind first of all. And that's what you've been doing the last 2 or 3 days. Number one, resting. Because a lot of sloth and torpor when you do meditation is just because you are tired. The story I tell was when I was in northeast Thailand. We would get up 3 o'clock every morning. Over the road in Bodh Nyana, we're supposed to get up at 4 o'clock. We're slack when we come to the west, 4 o'clock in the morning. But 3 o'clock we'd always get up, and sometimes the smart aleck monks would get up earlier than 3 o'clock. You know what it's like, the peer pressure. You know, you're in your room. Have you already figured out who the lazy ones are and who gets up really early in the morning? If you're the one who gets up really early in the morning, you come here in time for meditation and chanting, you look down upon all those other lazy scallywags. They're just taking the rooms up while other people should be meditating. And if you're one of those ones who sleeps in, you think, you know, they're really up their own backside, those people trying to get up early in the morning. Who do they think they are? So sometimes it's that pride, that peer pressure, you know, runs much of what we do. So 3 o'clock in the morning I used to get up, sometimes earlier, you know, just trying to prove something, prove how stupid I was. That was the main reason I proved. But anyway, trying to get up early, what, 3 o'clock, and then you go and meditate for a couple of hours. Now, no fans, no air conditioners. It was in the jungle. And that jungle in those days was really thick. So it's 3 o'clock in the morning. So I was sleep deprived. It was really hot, and I was born in England. I wasn't used to hot, you know, weather like that. Now, no cup of tea or coffee in the morning to wake you up. You just got up, glass of water, and off you went. And number three, it was early in the morning, sleep deprived. Oh, you're malnourished. Because, you know, I've told you many times the sort of food we used to eat in those days, sticky rice and whatever crawled and slithered around the ground. You know, you name it, bugs, snails, frogs. We didn't have cockroaches, but rats and all those sorts of stuff is what we used to eat. That's what the villagers used to eat. So, and it was, even the frogs were malnourished, so we didn't get much protein out of them either. So in other words, I was malnourished in a really hot climate I wasn't accustomed to. sleep deprived. And of course, in the mornings, I would start noddy and going to sleep. And at the time, I thought that that was because I wasn't mindful enough. I wasn't putting enough effort in my meditation. So you really try to screw your mind up and just really put forth effort and try all these amazing little tricks. One of the tricks we used to do was put the matchbox on top of your head. You take the cover off the matchbox, so you put the tray with all the matches on top of the head. So if you did nod, the matchbox would fall down and wake you up. And so it was a sign that you knew you were nodding. And it only took me 3 days using the matchbox technique, and I thought I'd conquered my sloth and torpor. I could sit for an hour and the matchbox wouldn't fall off. And I thought it was amazing. Just all you needed to do is to have some little bit of mindfulness to tell you when you were nodding, and then, you know, you could go overcome it. But then one of the other monks took me aside and said, you know, I had my eyes open when you were meditating, Ajahn Brahm. And I saw that matchbox on the top of the head, and this is why it wasn't falling. You were still nodding, but instead of nodding like this, you're nodding like this. It's really amazing just what the mind will do to trick you. It's totally subconscious, but so it got very, very disappointing. So I know. Actually, I do have a lot of willpower when I want to use it. And so that I really sort of try to screw up every ounce of energy. Just, I'm gonna beat this. You sat down there and I'm going to really watch that breath. I'm not going to miss one. I'm really going to put 100%, no, 200% effort into this. I'm not going to sort of give in. I'm going to fight. And I still fall asleep. But sometimes you wouldn't. Sometimes you break through the sleepiness. You know what happened next? You couldn't stop thinking. Think, 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 think. And so, come on, calm down, calm down. As soon as I calmed down, I was asleep again. And that was the problem at the beginning. You were either fast asleep or restless. And you couldn't find that place in the middle where you were awake but peaceful. And it took me a long time to realize, look, I'm fighting nature. You know, it's malnourished, sleep deprived, you know, a hot climate. No wonder I'm sleepy. I found that out because, you know, one of my jobs, the things which I helped the other monks with, was doing their visas for them. Now, one monk would organize the visa. I could write Thai. So I'd write out the forms in Thai and take them down to Bangkok. So I was down in Bangkok doing some visas for some monks. And we stayed in the big temple Wat Bawon, and they had a place for visiting monks, but they also had, because it was in the middle of Bangkok, an air-conditioned meditation hall. Well, it wasn't a meditation, it was like I rushed the hall for events. And we got permission to use it at 3 o'clock in the morning. And because the food in Bangkok was better, you know, because it was an air-conditioned room, I sat up there and it was great. There's no sloth and torpor. You could actually sit with a clear mind. And because I saw there was a change of situation there, you know, a climate which was cool rather than hot and muggy, and, you know, a better food, the sleepiness disappeared. And I realized from experiences like that, that much of people's sloth and torpor, the sleepiness, is nature. And you're trying to fight something you can't control. So instead, sleep properly. Then all you find, all your dullness disappears. Have good food. That's one of the reasons why, you know, I really understand meditation, why we built this meditation center this way. Sometimes people think it's too comfortable. No, it is not too comfortable. It is just right. In order for you to have a good rest, good sleep, be able to go to the toilet, for your body to be comfortable enough, you don't have to fight the results of a weak, sick body. So you're comfortable. And then you find the sloth and torpor is easier to overcome. This is like in preparation. So we're not fighting, we're resting. Which is why I tell people the first couple of days of a 9-day retreat, please rest. You're not wasting time, you're preparing your mind, making that transition from the busy world which you live in into a meditation retreat. You can't just, you know, leave your executive job and then come here and just, you know, sit and get into jhana straight away. You know, you've got to accustomize yourself, you know, to the new way of doing things. So a couple of days, rest, relax. And also at the same time, part of resting and relaxing, part of preparing your mind is doing things like present moment awareness and silence. Many of you who've been around this Buddhist society for a long time know the previous abbot, Ajahn Chakro. You know, he was listening to me to teach meditation once, and he gave me some really, really good advice, and I really respect him so much. He said, Ajahn Brahm, you're really good at teaching, you know, the high states of meditation, like, you know, the jhanas and the nimittas. But he said, you don't tell anybody how to, you know, to get to the beginning stages. And I really took what he said on board and put more effort in, you know, what you do before you start watching the breath. And to actually to start really emphasizing, you know, relaxing, present moment awareness and silence, because that's a preparation of the mind. So look, if you just, at least you're rested, say, and then you start watching the breath, and then still you start thinking about all sorts of things, the mind is restless. And the reason is because even if your body is relaxed, we're just so used to thinking, to planning. That's just the way we live in the world. And now I'm asking you to again to stop that thinking. That is the biggest problem, first of all, when you meditate, to stop all of that stuff. So that's why I put a lot of emphasis in the first couple of days. And you can keep this emphasis up for the whole retreat. Present moment awareness. No past. Doesn't matter where you've come from. I don't care, you know, how much meditation you've done before. No meditation at all. Don't matter if you've had jhanas before or you've, you know, just been crazy before. That's all in the past. Let that past go. And everyone in this room is equal. Your mind is empty and free. Because you find the past becomes your prison. A good example of that is a couple of people in this retreat that told me they've had great experiences before. You know, brilliant lives, beautiful deep meditations. Be careful. That wonderful experience, hey, it's great, but it'll become a prison for you. You won't be able to get some deep meditation when you keep remembering what happened in the past. Because what happens is you want it back again. And you're always comparing this moment with the past. And you always want. It's natural. So it doesn't matter how great an experience you've had in the past. You have to let it go. Now it's another person, another time, another place. Forget it. Otherwise, your past successes will prevent any other future deep meditations. Let the past go. And if you had terrible meditations in the past, you've been coming here for years and years and years and nothing has happened. Please, that also makes you a prisoner. I am hopeless. I can't meditate. I am useless. And again, you all know from basic psychology that if that's what you think, you will just live up to your expectation of being hopeless. So really, you have to totally let go of the past. You don't know what you can do. And I've been around a long time. And I've been teaching so many people meditation. And sometimes even I can't judge who's going to get the great meditations. Sometimes the most unlikely people come along and say they cracked it and got a really nice meditation, a really deep one. I can't tell. Neither can you. You don't know if you're hopeless or not. You don't know if you can do things or not. It's totally unknown because you cannot measure yourself from your past achievements or failures if you let them all go. Be free. So if you're in the present moment and you let go of the past, anything becomes possible. You're free of all those containers which stop you, you know, getting out of those boxes you've built for yourself in the past. But as soon as you let that past go, it's total freedom to achieve anything, to do anything, whatever you want to do. It's amazing just how much that we are restricted by the memories of our past. It's dangerous. It should not be really cultivated. So let the past totally go. Don't even care what's happened in the last, is it 2.5 days we've been here? That's totally in the past. That's history. It's gone. Delete it. and just stay in this present moment where life actually is happening, where anything is possible. And you know, if you can do that, if you can really delete the past and not worry about it for the whole period of this meditation retreat, you'll find that so much of the areas where you're thinking have been taken away, you just can't think so much. There's nothing much to think about when the whole past is gone. And as for the future, yeah, you don't know what's going to happen next. No one does. I can't predict anything. That's why when people do go along and say the world is going to end in 2012, and they're absolutely ridiculous, crazy idiots. No one can know even what the weather's going to do, you know, tomorrow. Now, no economist could predict what was going to happen with the global credit crisis, the financial crisis, the European debt. You know, all those economists, they just play catch-up. They can never predict anything. They're totally hopeless. They should get themselves sacked. They're a waste of time. They predict everything, and no one knows what's going to happen. Instead of investing on the stock market, you might as well take all your money to the casino. Because it's just as likely you're going to win or lose or whatever, so it's a totally waste of time. Actually, there's a story about that, about this man who was in deep meditation. And sometimes it happens. Sometimes in deep meditation you can hear these heavenly beings, these spirits. And it was clear, he said, you know, he made contact with this spirit world, and the spirit world told him, go to the casino. And he thought, what? Did I really hear that? And so he paid full mindfulness. He actually said it was actually a real thing. He wasn't imagining it. It was a real spirit. So he went to the casino. And they said, go to the roulette wheel. So he went to the roulette wheel. And he said, put $50 on number 10. So he put $50 on the number 10. And the guy who does the roulette wheel turned it around. And the ball fell in number 10. And the spirit said to him, put all the winnings on number 16. And he put all the winnings on number 16. They turned the wheel down. It's amazing. It went on number 16. He's making a fortune. And then he heard the spirit say, put all the money on number 32. So he put all the money on number 32. And the wheel went round. It fell in number 32 and bounced out to the number next to it. Out of which he heard the spirit say, shit. So not even the spirit can predict what's going to happen next. So forget about all the future stuff. The spirits get it wrong too. So when you can do that, if you can't actually do it, just imagine what it's like. Just imagine it. Just no past and no future. All you have is this moment right now. You can't think so much about it. You can't even control it. It's already here. It's a waste of time being negative about something that's already in front of you. You can't get rid of it. It's arrived. So by putting your attention on what's here, what's arrived, a lot of the thinking disappears, and the rest of it is very easy just to calm down. So by spending all that time on present moment awareness and silence, you're preparing your mind so that when you do watch the breath, the biggest obstacles to the breath meditation have already been dealt with. You dealt with them before you start the breath meditation, not during, because otherwise you won't be able to succeed. Prepare the mind. And so then when you have prepared the mind, then you just invite the breath in. And it's easy to do. Why? Because no past, no future, no thinking. You're relaxed, energized, no sleepiness. Biggest problems have been dealt with. And then it's easy. You don't need to put so much force and effort into watching the breath. It's just there for you. So what actually we do, sometimes people ask the question, how do I know I've done enough silence, enough present moment awareness to go on to the breath? Look, as long as 90% of it is gone, you can actually experiment. 90% of it's gone. You're not so concerned of the past. There's nothing much of the future going on in your head. Not thinking at 100 miles an hour. Maybe a thought comes in every now and again, but not many. Okay, you know, it's clean enough to start the breath meditation. But experiment. If you rush too much, then you have to put effort in. It doesn't work. So it means you've rushed too fast. And usually, because people want to attain, they want to get something out of this meditation, they want to go home and tell their friends what they've achieved. And because of that, there's always this pressure on you to please, let's do it quickly. I want to sort of start getting the breath. I want to do the nimittas. I want to get the jhanas. I want that bliss better than sex, which Ajahn Brahm kept on telling me, because I'm getting none at home. So I might as well come here and get the bliss better than sex here. So there's all this wanting, and that is the problem. So if you are given err on any side, err on patience. Don't go too quick. Be patient. Because anyway, just being in the present moment and being silent is blissful enough. But if you really want to, okay, let's give it a try. Let's invite the breath in. And now, even the way I speak, you invite the breath. You don't go and grab it by the throat and drag it into your mind. That's not the way to watch the breath. That's what some people do. Right, come on, watch the breath. Come on, watch the breath. Where are you, breath? Come here. That is far too violent. And you can understand what would happen. You just get tense again. So invite the breath in. Just like, you know, you would invite somebody into your home for a cup of tea. Now, if you invite someone into your home for a cup of tea or coffee, they will leave immediately if you haven't got a nice place for them to sit down and haven't got some delicious tea or coffee available. So your job is to be hospitable to your breath. Come in, breath. Sit down. How are you going? Be kind. That kindness, as I mentioned already, is so, so important. I was giving a lecture on meditation at this conference. You know, the Tibetans do this conference every year all over the world on happiness or whatever conference. So one of the other presenters was one of these professors from Stanford University. He was doing research on meditation. And you know, it's a big area of study these days, you know, to research what other people do when they're meditating. But his experiment, he got half his students, gave them credits, and sorry, he got his, some volunteer students, gave them credits for their degree, and to participate in this experiment. Half of the students, half of his sample, were sent to a retreat center for a one-day meditation retreat. And the other half was sent to a Californian spa to have massage, hot baths, these hot stones put on your back or whatever. And they went to a spa for one day. He wanted to find out what makes you more relaxed. You know, the meditation or the spa. And, you know, they have all these tests. They can work out. It's not what you feel. It's actually they can test you. So it's an objective test of how relaxed you are. And the results were astounding. They were not just about the same, significantly far, far more relaxed when you went to the spa. The meditation was making you more tense. And the reason was that was the mindfulness-based therapies without the kindness. And be careful. If you don't add the kindness into these into mindfulness, it doesn't work. It just makes you more tight. Because you force that mindfulness. So, whatever you're aware of, you have to have that magical ingredient of kindness. When you're kind to what you're watching, it relaxes and you relax. Now, I know that some people think, oh, you can only be kind to people or to animals. You can be kind to anything. And I literally mean anything. There's this amazing story. I asked the guy many, many times, and you know, he assures me, and I believe him now, that it's absolutely true. This happened. It was Mike. Remember Mike the Anagarika from Germany? He stayed a while at our monastery. I saw him, I think, 2 years ago in Germany. He's gone back to Germany now. And while he was a student in some university in Germany, I was in, it was in Hanover. I forget. Well, anyway, in some university in Germany, he was a student there. And on the first day on campus, he just happened to be walking past the ATM machine. And it made a sound. He called it like a gurgling sound. And he thought that, the ATM was welcoming me to campus. You know, that's when machines make sounds, and, you know, we just anthropomorphize. You know, we say, that's the machine welcoming me to campus. So, you know, he said hello back. And, you know, he sort of adopted that ATM machine, and that was, you know, his machine. And he was always kind to it and always, you know, wished it good morning and stuff like that. And, you know, he was actually doing kindness to the ATM machine. And he said, a few months later, he was sitting on a bench having his lunch. You know, the ATM machine was a few meters away. And he heard the gurgle again. Oh, the ATM machine is saying hello to me. And then he saw a 20 euro note come out. And he couldn't believe it. Because he'd been sitting there for about 10 or 15 minutes. No one had gone past that machine. No one had actually keyed in any numbers. It was vacant for about 10 or 15 minutes. So he went over to the machine, he took the 20 euro note. Has this belonged to anybody? No one claimed it. So he put it in his pocket. And that day, he realized the results of giving loving kindness to an ATM machine is every now and again you get $20 or euro, whichever you want. So the moral of that story is, if you really practice loving kindness meditation, you're a bit short of a few dollars. Go to the ATM machine. May all ATM machines be happy and well. May you really be loving. May no one ever get angry at you. May all the people be kind to you. May they put the credit card in very slowly and gently. And may they never sort of bang you when it says you've got no money left in the account. May people treat you nicely and kindly, dear, and stroke the machine. Yeah. Nice. You might get 100 ringgit out if you're from Malaysia. That actually was true. It worked. He got 20 euros out from the ATM machine because he was kind. Do you believe that? It's true. So if you can be kind. Look, we used to have this old cement mixer years ago. I bought it. That was my mixer. And other monks, they couldn't get it to work. And I would just stroke it and say, come on. And it would always work for me. Every time it would work for me. Other people, it wouldn't. And other people have told me they've done that with their car. Sometimes their car is not working. And they just go and stroke it. Come on. You know, be kind. You know, it's really important. You know, we'll give you a nice service next week, I promise. And the car works. Many times it's happened. People have told me that. So you can be kind to even machines. You can be kind to whatever you're watching. So the kindness doesn't need to be going to another being. It can go to things. So when you're kind to your breath will respond. It'll get all soft and nice. Just like, you know, if I'm kind to you, you know, you like to hang out. Oh, he's a nice, kind monk. He's nice, soft. I don't want to go anywhere. That's one of my problems. But if you're kind to the breath, it doesn't want to go anywhere. So when you start watching the breath, you invite it in. And you're kind to it. And for the rest of the time, you can imagine that breath as your friend. You hold its hand and you walk together through the path of meditation. You're not its boss and master. If you boss the breath around, it will disappear. It will be restless. But if it's like you hold its hand very gently, you're walking down together, enjoying each other's company, then it will stay. Remember the kindness. Now, just a few details about how you watch the breath. Now, sometimes you can use words. I like to use practical examples. So, I don't know if you've been meditating for the last 100 lifetimes. I don't care. Now, I want everybody to just close your eyes. With your eyes closed, just breathe in and out 3 times. Count those 3 breaths, and at the end of the 3rd breath, open your eyes. Just count 3 breaths. At the end of the 3rd out-breath, open your eyes. Just 3. You should all be able to count to 3. Now, how did you know you were breathing in and breathing out? Doesn't matter. You don't have to answer me. Answer yourself. What was the sensation which told you, yeah, you were starting to breathe in, the in-breath had finished. Now the out-breath was happening. There was a certain feeling and sensation. And that's how you know the breath. Now, it's wonderful being able to teach people for the very first time. So they don't get into these stupid things about watching the tip of their nose or watching the belly or watching any place. They just feel the breath. So they get the object of meditation correct on the very first time. And that makes life so much easier for them, doing breath meditation. It's the feeling of the breath, that sensation which tells you the breath is going in, the breath is going out, the beginning of the in-breath or whatever. That particular sensation which you can recognize as a feeling of the breath. And it doesn't have to be located at the tip of the nose. And I will tell you why. I already told you one reason. You go cross-eyed. That's one reason. Another reason, many of you, like me, suffer hay fever or colds. And so I remember I was told to watch the tip of the nose when I first started meditating, but I had hay fever. My nose was blocked. I couldn't do it. They say, you had to, that's the only way to watch the breath. But I said, look, I'm not breathing there. There's nothing going on. And so, you know some of these meditation teachers are so inflexible. And I thought I could not meditate anymore. It was just, maybe in the nice seasons when my nose was clear, I could meditate. The rest of the year, I'd have to do something else. And then, of course, you figured out that the next time somebody said, watch your belly. That was the Mahasi method. Just watch your belly go up and down. I thought, at last, I can actually do breath meditation. But then when I became a monk, that didn't work either. If you watch your belly as a monk or on a retreat, when it comes to maybe 5, 6, 7 o'clock in the afternoon or evening, your belly is so close to your tummy, you start to feel hungry. That's what happened to me. Watching my belly and I was watching my tummy, they were too close together. Oh, I'm hungry, I want something to eat. So that didn't work either. So, you had to figure it out yourself. And it was wonderful, that just insight which comes up. This is breath meditation, not belly meditation, not nose meditation, but breath meditation, breath. And then I actually realized that I could always watch the breath, even with a stuffed nose, even being hungry, I was still breathing, I could still know the breath. And so I just focused on knowing the breath. The sensation which told me I was breathing in, breathing out, I didn't give a damn where that was located. Because I didn't even care about where it's located. That was not the point. Not to fix it on the body somewhere, but to fix the attention on the feeling of the breath. And that just opened up so much beautiful meditation for me. That's why I share it with you. Just be aware of the breath. And when you're just aware of the feeling of the breath, you know what the object is. Now, earlier on, I did mention to you those three levels of recognition, familiarity, and ease. So I'm teaching you how to recognize what this object is, the breath. And you will also notice that when you first start watching the breath, it becomes uncomfortable. It's no longer a natural breath. Because whatever you watch, you interfere with. The usual example of this, now I want you to observe the feeling of saliva in your mouth and throat. Can you feel the saliva? A few moments ago, it was quite comfortable. Now it's not. And the reason is, because as soon as you watch it, you interfere with it. Should I swallow? Should I not swallow? Even my saliva is uncomfortable now. That's much better. A few moments ago, because I wasn't really paying attention to it, it was just natural. This is what happens. When you pay attention to something, you interfere with it. So when you first watch the breath, it's not a natural breath. It's not comfortable. So that's where you really need to put that kindness in. And when you put the kindness into the breath, it soon gets gentle. It becomes a normal breath again. You're just leaving it alone. Okay, look, I'm watching you breath, but you don't need to do anything. I'm kind. It's like some of you when you come to interviews. Sometimes you think it's an interrogation at Guantanamo Bay, the way that you look at me. Please don't hit me, Ajahn Brahm. Please don't torture me. You guys know me for such a long time. I'm a big softie. No one will ever do that. But sometimes people, they don't know you, so they're scared. So it's like the breath. It sees you coming. Oh, God, what does she want me to do? And then after a while, you kind of, it's only her again. So it relaxes. You relax. And that's when the breath gets natural. When it gets natural, that's when it gets pleasant. And the pleasantness of your object of meditation, again, is important. The kindness makes it pleasant. Whatever you're kind to. Look, you go and find the meditation retreat rabbit, no Muti. If you hit that rabbit's going to bite you, and so will Dania. But if you stroke that rabbit, then Dania will smile at you, and the rabbit will sort of... How does it go? It goes, go, I'll start up again. It licks you, yeah. So if you're kind to it, sort of it gives you kindness back. So if you're kind to your breath, the breath is kind back to you. That's how it works. But if you're vicious to the breath, come here, breath. You've been wasting my time so long. This time you're going to stay with me. Of course, then the breath will get upset too. So if you're kind to that breath, it stays with you. And it's pleasant to be with a rabbit which licks you. Because of that pleasure, it's easy to maintain the attention. The reason why your attention is maintained is simply because of pleasure. You're happy to be here. That's why you can watch the TV for hours, because it's pleasurable, it's entertaining. That's why I have to tell jokes to get you to pay attention to my talks, because then it becomes pleasurable. Otherwise, people will just be looking down, getting out their sort of iPods and just SMSs, whatever. It's not iPods, what is it? Those mobile phones. Anyway, that is why that when it's pleasurable, it's easy to keep people's attention. So when the breath becomes pleasurable, it's easy. So there's always, from the very beginning, a certain amount of pleasure with watching the breath, if you're kind to it. And that is what sticks the attention there, not the force of your will. Do you have to really put a lot of will, you know, to watch a movie which you like? Do you have to sit there and say, I must pay attention to Harry Potter, I must pay attention, I must pay. Of course you don't. You can't take your eyes off it. Because it's enjoyable, it's interesting. So when is that pleasure with a meditation object like the breath? You don't put willpower anymore. You can relax, which is important. It's a letting go again. You're just staying with one object, peacefully just being there. And that is why once you have the breath, first of all, just like going out from the lit room into the dark, you can't see so much. So when you first watch the breath, it's just the breath going in, the breath going out. But as you stay there longer, it develops. You start to see the beginning of the in-breath, the middle, the end. You start to see the gaps between the breaths. When the in-breath has finished and the out-breath has yet to begin. And then you see the very, very beginning of the out-breath and you see it grow stage by stage to its peak and then fall away again. And it's interesting. The reason is because of that kindness and because, you know, you are literally, your mindfulness is increasing in power, you start to see more. So you start to see the whole breath from the beginning to the end. That's one of the stages in Anapanasati. You know, you'd watch the breath, you'd watch the whole breath from the beginning to the end of every breath. And sometimes people say, wow, that's so boring. What are you doing just watching the breath? You're weird. But actually, the experience is something else. The experience is very delightful, very peaceful. And you feel great. The very first time I meditated on the breath, in the Wordsworth Room of King's College, Cambridge, in 1969. First time I meditated. And I remember the place, because it was one of those great moments in my life. 5 minutes of meditation, but going like, wow, this is really peaceful, this is really nice. Just watching the breath, that's what it's like. So once you get into it, once you made the preparation, you do it properly, you follow the instructions, it's very, very delightful. Should be, as the Buddha once said to his monks, it's one of the favorite quotes I have. It's in, this is in the Word of the Buddha translation by Nyanatiloka. He said, this is a path without groaning. No groans. This is a peaceful, happy, joyful, easy path. So if you're groaning, it's not meditation. This is called Anapanasati, not Anapanasati. Anna means along with, Pana the breath, Sati mindfulness. This is mindfulness along with the breath, Anapana, not Anapana. Sati, the Buddha. A lot of people do Anapana Sati, though. I've seen them. So do Anapana Sati, not Anapana Sati, mindfulness along with the breath. So you get to this stage and you see the whole breath just going in, going out. And the next stage becomes, it's actually really delightful. Just being with this breath, going in, going out. You're happy as Larry, just nice, peaceful, nice, content. Just like some of you, you'd be sitting on the stupa there, just watching the sunset or watching the trees, watching the weather in the morning. You know, have you sort of, you know, gone out there early in the morning, just by yourself, sitting there and just watching the beautiful forest? It's delightful. You're just happy, there's nothing to do, just a nice, delightful forest to watch. You get that beautiful happiness, the contented happiness. And that's what happens when you're watching the breath. It's just so nice watching the breath go in, watching the breath go out, seeing all these amazing feelings, nothing to do in the whole world, just to watch one breath. You know, how simple that is, no worries, no concerns, no problems from the past, no sort of fears of the future. Totally content in this present moment. You get into understand what a monk and nun is all about. The idea of this hermit on the top of the mountain, just watching life come, watching the sun get up in the morning, the sun go down in the evening, no worries, no concerns, nothing to be concerned about in the whole world, totally at peace, relaxed, tranquil. Oh, what fun. And that's how you feel. Just sitting there, just watching the forest, or in your meditation, just sitting there, watching the breath go in and go out. It becomes delightful. Now, when it does become delightful, please enjoy it. Indulge in it. Too many people, when they meditate, think, I'm enjoying myself. Something must be wrong. A lot of that is because of our conditioning. Because there are some monks, and I don't mind saying that they shouldn't be teaching, when they say, ah, you'll get attached to that happiness. And sometimes, if I had any hair, I'd tear it out. Because you're supposed to get attached to that happiness. That is the joy of meditation. Arana Vibhanga Sutta said, no, indulge in it, get off on that. There's no dangers in that type of happiness. You'd separate the two types of happiness, the happiness of the world, the Amisa Sukha, the five senses, the Niramisa Sukha, the happiness of meditation. Happiness of meditation, not by Yitta Bang. I say Witta Bang, Bahuri Kata Bang, Baweta Bang. I say it in Pali just to impress you. It means you should not be afraid of that. You should follow it, make much of it, develop it. That happiness of meditation, that's the words of the Buddha. And if you do indulge in those happinesses of meditation, if you really get off on them and get attached to them, he said, only four things can result in being attached to the pleasure of meditation. Only four results, not a fifth, not a sixth. Only four things can happen to you if you get attached to the pleasure of meditation. Number one, streamlining. Number two, once returning. Number three, non-returning. Number four, full enlightenment. The four stages of enlightenment. That's what you're supposed to do. That's what we're here for, to become enlightened. This is what happens if you indulge in the happiness of meditation. As said by the Buddha, Parsarika Sutta Digha Nikaya. I'll show it to you if you doubt me. It's right there, very clear. So when the happiness comes up, brilliant, well done. Enjoy it, get off on it. And you know that people are meditating well. Not when they come up and say, Ajahn Brahma just sat for 4 hours. Say, yeah, well, chickens can sit for 5 hours. I said, I've just had this amazing insight, seeing to the nature of the world. I said, look, there's a lot of people in the local hospital, it's Greylands over here, who've also seen the meaning of the world as well. And this is the meaning of the world. What's it called? Over there. All your great insight don't mean anything at all. And the length of time you meditate. But what, to a teacher, I really look for is your smile. Are you happy? That is a much, much better indicator of how your meditation is going. And if you doubt me again, I'll point you to the Dhammacaddiya Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya. This is called Monuments of the Dhamma, where King Prasenadi was going to see the Buddha for the last time. He was about to die, the king. And he went into the Buddha's hut and literally kissed the Buddha's feet. A king. Imagine Queen Elizabeth coming here last week doing that to him. That would really get in the news. But she was here a couple of weeks ago, but she didn't come to visit. Yeah. But anyway. The king just was... He said, what are you doing that for, great king? And he said, look, I just love you, and I love this monastery. You know, this has been my local monastery. It just lives literally walking distance away in the city. And so lucky I've been, I've had a Buddha, you know, as, you know, my guide. And he said, I love coming to this monastery. And this is the one part of the whole sutta. And the Buddha said, why do you like coming to this monastery? And the king said, because in this monastery, the monks are always smiling and happy. And that's actually a little photograph from the past. That's what it was like in the monasteries where the Buddha was. The monks weren't severe and scowling. They were happy and smiling. And the Buddha said, yes, King, that's what you can expect when their meditation's going well, when their insights are flowing. And I always take that as a wonderful confirmation. That's actually how you know how you're going. Your smile. The indicator on your face. Down here, no, you're going badly. Horizontal, that's not good enough. Up here, that's going well. Up here, now you're getting somewhere. So this is the delight, the happiness which happens with the breath. So when it comes up, people say, what should I do? Just enjoy it, do nothing. Just carry on. And remember, all this time you're just watching the breath. You're not doing very much. You're just watching. And the deeper you go, the less you need to do. Remember, it's the happiness, the joy keeps your attention there. What do you need to sort of force your mind for? You don't need to, just let it go. It will stay there easily, with as much effort as if, you know, you watch your favourite soccer team play in some grand final. Or watch your favourite movie, or listen to your favourite music on the TV. No effort at all. Because you're enjoying it. It's the joy which holds the mind. So you just let it be. Now, I didn't say earlier, I mentioned it, I think, last night, that sometimes you don't even need to invite the breath in. It just comes by itself. Now, that is the Rolls-Royce type of meditation, as far as I'm concerned. You just hear, you're in the present moment, you're silent, and the breath just comes up. You know, uninvited, it's just there. And I mentioned the reason why is because your eyes are closed, the sight stops, you're not really paying any attention to sound, most of the sound stops. No smell, no taste, your body's absolutely still, nothing else is moving. The only thing which is moving is your breath. So when everything else stops, that's the only thing left to watch. That is the best way. If you really are that still, the breath is the only thing left. So when that comes up, that's number one, best way of meditating. So these days, I never invite the breath in, I never go searching for it. I just relax and it just comes to me. And when it comes to you, because you never go looking for it, when it comes, it's always very peaceful. I just carry on doing nothing, just sitting there, and that's the breath, and because I'm relaxed and peaceful, the mindfulness gets stronger and stronger, and you see the whole breath, and you know, the mindfulness gets even stronger, and it's incredibly beautiful, you have a wonderful time. Now that type of happiness, doesn't matter how you get into that, that's why I deliberately mention inviting the breath in, because sometimes people don't know how to do that, they don't know how to let go enough for the breath to come up naturally. But if it doesn't come up naturally, you can invite it in, because it doesn't matter so much, a little bit of effort in the beginning of the meditation. As you go deeper, it really is crucial not to do anything. So look, in deeper meditation, if you get to the stage of, say, you know, the delightful breath, say, what should I do next? Red flag, alarm bells. Number one, there is no next. Present moment, okay. What should I do? The doing is another red flag. Don't do anything. Your job is just to be a passenger, to be an observer, not to be a doer. All the doing stops you getting meditating in the first place, and now you're blowing it by getting this doer up and running again. Stop it. Be quiet. Be peaceful. Just watch. See what happens. It's one of my favorite sayings. Just see what happens. In other words, you know, you just be totally passive and just, oh, what's going to happen next? I don't know. See what happens. But don't do anything. Don't interfere. So when you get to the delightful breath, It gets really delightful. And the measure of that delight, I always say, is that when you're sitting here, you're having this delightful breath, all the breath going in and going out, and you realize that it's 11 o'clock and it's time for lunch. And you get this dilemma, should I have my lunch or should I carry on meditating? And if I don't have my lunch, that's it for the day. And you carry on meditating. It's no contest. You'd rather have the delightful breath and go without food. And that's the sign that the delight is really established. You can eat tomorrow. It doesn't really matter, but the breath is so delightful. And you see that people actually sitting at 11 o'clock here and they're going to miss their lunch. They know they're going to miss their lunch. They're just too happy. What do I want to sort of get rid of this beautiful happiness for? Now that's the sign of the delight. And that's only the beginning. There's much more to come yet. That's just the entree into the bliss and the super bliss and the mega bliss and the giga blisses which are coming next. So what happens next is beautiful and just delightful breath, and it gets so smooth and so delightful and so happy, and then you notice there's no more breath. The breath has vanished. Now when it's vanished, don't worry at all. You're not going to die. In all the years I've taught meditation, no one has died yet during one of my retreats. And you're not going to be the first. I'm not going to spoil my record. You are totally safe. You are actually breathing, but it's just so soft you can't perceive it anymore. And anyway, the mind has turned to something else. It's the pure delight. The breath has stopped. And with it, the last perception of the five senses. Or maybe you can hear some sound, but the body is totally vanished now. Can't feel the legs, can't feel the head, can't feel the breath. It's gone. Bye-bye. Oh, what bliss to get rid of my body. I don't know about yours, but mine sucks. I know that I'm in pretty good health, so those of you who are sick, I don't know how you handle it. But you can let the body go. And oh, the great burden has disappeared. I don't need to scratch my nose anymore. I don't need to go to the toilet. I don't need to sort of put stuff in my mouth because I'm thirsty or hungry. I don't need to do anything at last. I don't need to scratch anything. I can actually totally relax and disappear. Bye-bye, body. And that's just so blissful, leaving your body for a little while. You don't go flying through the air. That's not what I mean. Just the body vanishes and you're just so peaceful and so still. When that happens, don't go looking for the breath. It's supposed to happen and it's blissful, it's incredibly safe. And any of you who do have health problems, that is one place where really great health benefits occur. When you leave your body, and the body just is there, you're just somewhere else. The body does a heck of a lot of healing. I don't know how it does it, but I realize that when I'm in the way, I just make these sicknesses worse. When I disappear, somewhere else and during my deep meditation, come out afterwards and the body's great. Now even now, I'm getting old, now I can still sit for hours, but even now, your knees get a bit aching sometimes, the back is a bit stiff. That's why even this morning, just getting up for breakfast, you staggered the first few steps because all stiff. But whenever I get into deep meditation, you can sit for hours and you get up and your body is just so loose. There's not an ache in the body. It's incredible. First time I did that, I have a long meditation, 4 or 5 hours. I thought, God, this is going to hurt. I haven't moved for such a long time. This is going to be really painful. You got up and everything was so loose. No pain at all. It's the power of these meditations. It really helps to relax and heal all the aches and pains and sicknesses in your body. It's brilliant. But you've got to get in there, first of all. So the body has disappeared. Now, for most people, many people, when it disappears, they don't know what to watch. Remember that simile again I said about just when you go out for a dark room? If they're going out from a lit room into the darkness, you can't see things very clearly at first. So when that breath disappears, don't go looking for something. Just wait for a while. Be patient. Soon you begin to recognize what's there when the breath is gone. You recognize it, become familiar with it, and you can just be at ease there. A lot of times, it's people like a sense of silence and peace, of emptiness, if you like. It doesn't matter what you call it. You can recognize that particular state. And it's very joyful, it's very peaceful. Enjoy that. So don't go looking for other signposts which aren't there. Just recognize those which are there. Recognize them, become familiar with them. And it's also that state. Because the next thing which happens is very easy to recognize. That's the beautiful lights come up, the nimittas. Beautiful lights come up in the mind. Now those lights can sometimes come up earlier, but they're not really useful. The ones which come up in the right order, once the breath has disappeared, they're really the nice ones. But to understand more about those, you have to come here tomorrow. Because my time is up. And more is coming tomorrow. So, that is part one of Anapanasati. And just to sum up again, preparation is really important. You can try watching, inviting the breath in if you like. If it's too early, you'll have to use too much force and it'll never really sort of work. So go back to basics, present moment awareness and silence, get those really going, and then you'll be fine. Make sure you've rested enough, you know, fed yourself enough, exercised enough. When you do invite the breath in, if you do invite the breath, it doesn't come in naturally, be kind to it, hold its hand, it's a friend, not a slave. Treat it with kindness and it will stay with you. And just as you develop, you'll find you see more of the breath. You don't have to say, now I have to go on to the full awareness of the breath. This happens naturally. It's a development, not something you decide to do. See the whole breath. It becomes delightful. When it does, don't be afraid of the delight. Enjoy it. Indulge in it. Then it becomes so delightful that eventually just the delight is all that's left and just the breath disappears. Don't be afraid. Just stay for a while there and see what's there. And get to know that state. And soon these beautiful lights will appear. And then you really get into the heavy stuff. And that is going to be explained tomorrow. Okay, happy meditating.